Chapter 6. Schizophrenia, as described. It was 1:30 in the morning when a man with a pointed beard, draped in a white coat, entered the examining room of the famous psychiatric clinic built recently on the outskirts of Moscow by the riverbank. Inside, three orderlies had their eyes glued to Ivan Nikolaevich, who was sitting on a couch. A very agitated poet, Ruekin, sat nearby. The napkins used to bind Ivan Nikolaevich lay in a pile on the same couch. Ivan Nikolaevich's arms and legs were free. Seeing the man enter, Ruekin grew pale, coughed, and said timidly, "Hello, doctor." The doctor bowed to Ruekin, looking, however, at Ivan Nikolaevich. The latter sat perfectly still, his face angry and his eyebrows furled, without batting an eyelid at the doctor's appearance. "Here, doctor," Ruekin began, whispering clandestinely for some reason and glancing nervously at Ivan Nikolaevich. "Ivan Homeless, a famous poet, you see. We're afraid it might be delirium tremens." "Is he a heavy drinker?" the doctor asked through his teeth. No, he's been known to have a few, but nowhere near enough to..." "Has he tried to chase imaginary cockroaches, rats, little devils or jumping dogs?" "No," replied Ruekin, shuddering. I saw him yesterday and also this morning. He seemed perfectly healthy." "Why the long johns, brought here straight from bed?" "He came to the restaurant like this, doctor."
Uh-huh,
said the doctor, very satisfied. "Why the bruises? Did he get in a fight?"
"He jumped a fence and then hit this one guy in the restaurant, and then a few more."
Right, said the doctor, and turning to Ivan, added, "Hello."
"Greetings, wrecker!"
Ivan replied loudly and angrily. Ruekin was so embarrassed that he dared not even look at the polite doctor, but the latter was not at all offended. Instead, he took off his glasses with a deft and familiar motion, and lifting his coat, concealed them in the rear pocket of his trousers. Then he asked Ivan, "How old are you?"
"Would you all go to hell already?"
Ivan shouted rudely and turned away. "Why are you angry? Have I said anything unpleasant?"
"I'm 23 years old," Ivan said impatiently, "and I'm going to file complaints on all of you. You especially, parasite."
He addressed Ruekin in particular. "And what is it you intend to complain about?"
"The fact that I, an absolutely normal person, have been snatched and dragged forcibly to the madhouse,"
Ivan replied wrathfully. Ruekin looked more carefully at Ivan and felt a chill. There was not a trace of insanity in the man's eyes. No longer clouded, as they had been at Griboyedov, they regained their old clarity. "Goodness gracious," Ruekin thought anxiously. "He's completely normal. What nonsense. Why did we drag him out here, really? Sane. Just got his face scratched up is all." "You are not in a madhouse," the doctor informed calmly, sitting down on a white stool mounted on a shiny metal foot. "You are at a clinic where no one will detain you without need." Ivan Nikolaevich glanced at him suspiciously, but nonetheless muttered,
"Thank God, finally, a single normal person among all these idiots, the chief one being this hack, Sashka."
"Who is this Sashka hack?" inquired the doctor.
"This one, Ruekin,"
Ivan replied, shoving his dirty finger in Ruekin's direction. The latter lit up with indignation. "That's my thanks," he thought bitterly. "That's for showing compassion. What a piece of garbage."
"A typical kulak mentality," spoke Ivan Nikolaevich,
evidently bent on denouncing Ruekin.
"And trying to masquerade as a proletariat, no less. Look at his bland expression, and see if you can juxtapose it with the loud rhymes he wrote for May Day. Rise up and unfold. Take a look inside him. See what he thinks. You'd gasp."
Ivan Nikolaevich laughed sinisterly. The red-faced Ruekin breathed heavily and thought only of how he had warmed a serpent on his bosom, how he had tried to help someone who turned out to be a malicious enemy. Worst of all, there was nothing he could do. Who would squabble with a mental patient? So why were you brought here exactly? Asked the doctor, having listened carefully to Homeless's accusations.
Oh, damn the blockheads to hell! Grabbed me, tied me up with some rags, and hauled me off in a truck.
Then let me ask you why you wore underwear to the restaurant.
Nothing out of the ordinary here, Ivan replied. I went for a swim in the Moscow River, and someone made off with my clothes and left me these rags. What, was I supposed to run round Moscow naked? I put them on because I was in a hurry to get to Griboyedov's restaurant.
The doctor looked inquisitively at Ruekin, who muttered grimly, That's what the restaurant is called. I see, said the doctor. And why were you in such a hurry? Some business meeting?
I'm hunting this consultant, replied Ivan Nikolaevich, glancing round anxiously.
What consultant?
Do you know Berlioz?
Ivan asked meaningfully. The composer? Ivan became upset.
What composer? Oh, yeah, no, I mean, no, the composer has the same name as Misha Berlioz.
Ruekin had no desire to say anything, but was forced to explain. The Secretary-General of Masoret, Berlioz, was run over by a tram today on the Patriarchs.
Shut up, what do you know?
Ivan snapped at Ruekin.
I was there, not you. He intentionally set him up for the tram.
Pushed him?
What's push got to do with it?
Exclaimed Ivan, annoyed at the general obtuseness.
No one needed to push anyone. The things he can cook up, you'd best hold on to your hat. He knew in advance that Berlioz would fall under the tram.
Has anyone besides you seen this consultant?
That's the problem. Only Berlioz and I.
Right. So what measures did you take to apprehend this killer? Here the doctor turned and cast a glance at a woman in a white coat, who was sitting behind a desk off to the side. She took out a form and began to fill in the blanks.
Here's what measures. First I took a candle from the kitchen.
This one? Asked the doctor, pointing to a broken candle lying on the woman's desk next to the icon.
That's the one, and...
And why the icon?
The icon, well...
Ivan blushed.
The icon was the thing that got them so worked up.
Again he thrust his finger at Ruekin.
But the thing is that this consultant, to put it frankly... He's mixed up with evil spirits. You can't catch him just like that.
For some reason, the orderlies straightened up and fixed their eyes on Ivan.
Oh, yes,
Ivan continued.
Mixed up with them, all right. That's one incontrovertible fact. He personally spoke with Pontius Pilate. Don't need to stare at me. It's all true. He saw everything, the balcony, the palms. He's been to Pontius Pilate's. I vouch for it.
Well, well.
So, as it were, I pinned the icon to my chest and ran.
Suddenly the clock struck twice.
Hey! Hey!
Ivan exclaimed, rising from the couch.
It's already two. I'm losing time here. Excuse me, where's the phone?
Let him use the phone, the doctor commanded to the orderlies. Ivan grasped the receiver, while the woman asked Ruekin quietly, Is he married? Single, Ruekin answered fearfully. Union member? Yes.
Police! Ivan shouted into the receiver. Police! Whoever's on duty, please dispatch 5 motorcycles with machine guns to capture a foreign consultant. What? Drop by here. I'll come with you. I'm homeless, a poet. I'm in the madhouse. What's your address?
Homeless whispered to the doctor, covering the receiver with his hand, then shouted at the phone again.
Are you listening? Hello? Unbelievable!
He howled suddenly and flung the receiver at the wall. He then turned to the doctor, offered his hand, bid him goodbye dryly, and turned to leave. Forgive me, but where is it you want to go? Spoke the doctor, peering into Ivan's eyes. So late at night, in your underwear. You don't seem to be feeling too well. Stay with us a while.
Let me through,
Ivan said to the orderlies, blocking the door.
Are you going to let me through or not?
The poet cried in a fearsome voice. Ruekin trembled, and the woman pressed a button on her desk, causing a shiny box and a sealed bottle to pop out onto its glass surface.
Oh, yeah,
Ivan said, glancing round wildly like cornered prey.
All right, then. Farewell.
And he dived head first at the window curtains. The impact was resounding, but the shatterproof glass behind the curtains held. And moments later, Ivan was struggling in the hands of the orderlies.
he rasped, trying to bite them, and screamed. Nice glass you've got yourselves around here! Let go! Let go, I said!
A syringe flashed in the doctor's hand, and the woman sliced open the frail sleeve of Ivan's shirt with a single stroke, latching onto the arm with unwomanly strength. The air began to smell of ether. Ivan went limp in the hands of the four men, and the doctor deftly seized this opportunity to jab the needle into his arm. They held Ivan for several more seconds and then lowered him onto the couch.
Bandits!
Ivan cried and leapt up from the couch, but was immediately returned to his seat. As soon as he was let go, he jumped up again, but this time sat back down on his own. He was silent for a moment, gazing round savagely, then unexpectedly yawned and smiled spitefully.
Locking me up after all,
he said, yawning again, and then lay down suddenly, placing his head on the pillow and sticking his fist under his cheek like a child. He kept muttering a while longer, his voice already sleepy and calm.
Very well, then. You'll be the ones regretting it. I warned you. So do as you will. As for me, I'm much more interested in Pontius Pilate right now. Pilate.
And he closed his eyes. Bath him. Put him in the number 117 single and keep an eye on him, ordered the doctor, replacing his glasses. Ruekin shuddered again. The white doors slid noiselessly open, revealing a hallway lit by blue night lights. A stretcher rolled out from the hallway on rubber wheels. The pacified Ivan was transferred to it and carted off down the hallway, the doors closing behind him.
Doctor,
Ruekin whispered in shock.
Is he really sick, then?
Oh, yes, said the doctor.
What's wrong with him?
Ruekin asked timidly. The tired doctor glanced at Ruekin and said wearily, Overexcitation of motor and speech functions. Delirious interpretations. Looks like a complex case. Schizophrenia, I would assume. And the alcoholism as well. From the doctor's words, Ruekin understood only that Ivan Nikolaevich was apparently not too well. He sighed and asked, What was all that consultant business he kept bringing up? He probably saw someone who struck his troubled imagination. Or perhaps he was hallucinating. Several minutes later, the truck was carrying Ruekin back to Moscow. Dawn was approaching, and the light from lampposts still glowing along the side of the road was now unnecessary and unpleasant. The driver was angry on account of a wasted night and pushed the truck as fast as it would go, making it skid on the turns. The forest tapered off, vanishing behind them, and the river veered sideways. A multitude of objects now poured past the truck. Fences with sentry booths, stacks of wood, tall posts, masts with spools of wire, heaps of rubble, canals etching through the land. In short, you could feel Moscow approaching, right around the corner, about to leap out and swallow you. Ruekin was tossed and jerked in the back, and the stump of wood he was sitting on kept trying to slip out from underneath him. The restaurant napkins rolled all over the truck bed, thrown there by Pantelei and the policeman who had left earlier. Ruekin tried to gather them up, but then hissed maliciously. To hell with them! Why should I crawl around here like an idiot? He pushed them aside with his foot and looked away. The passenger's spirits were terribly low. It became clear that his visit to the asylum had left an extremely unpleasant mark. Ruekin tried to understand what tormented him so. The hallway with blue lights stuck in his memory. The thought that nothing could be worse than losing one's mind. Yes, yes, they certainly had a part in it, but they were merely general observations. There was something else. What was it? The insult. That's what. Yes. Yes, the insulting words that Homeless had hurled right in his face. And it was not their hurtful tone that made them so bad, but the fact that they were true. No longer looking up and staring only at the filthy, vibrating floor, the poet muttered, whined, and gnawed at himself. The poetry. He was 32 years old. So what now, really? Now he would continue to write several poems a year? Till he grew old? Yes, till he grew old. What will these poems bring him? Fame? What rubbish! At least don't try to deceive yourself. Fame will never come to one who writes bad poetry. And what makes it so bad? The truth. He spoke the truth. Thruekin badgered himself mercilessly. I don't believe in a single word I write. The poet swayed, envenomed by his inner breakdown, and then the floor underneath him stopped shaking. Thruekin raised his head and saw that he was already in Moscow, and furthermore that dawn had broken over the city, that the clouds were lit from underneath with gold, that the truck had stopped, stuck in a column of traffic by the boulevard turn, and that directly opposite him, a metal man stood on a pedestal, tilting his head slightly and staring indifferently at the street. Strange thoughts flooded the afflicted poet's head. Now here's an example of true luck. Thruekin stood up on the truck's platform and raised his hand, attacking the completely harmless Iron Man. No matter where he went in life, no matter what happened to him, everything went his way. Everything turned to fame. But what has he actually done? I can't grasp it. What's so special about those words? Storm has set the sky in shadow. I don't understand. Luck. Dumb luck, Thruekin concluded bitterly, and felt the truck move underneath him. That white guardsman shot him and smashed his hip and assured him immortality. The column of traffic budged. Feeling completely ill and very old, the poet stepped onto the Griboyedov veranda not 2 minutes later. It was already empty. A group was finishing drinks in the corner, a familiar MC fussing around in its midst, wearing a skull cap and holding a glass of abrau in his hand. Burdened with napkins, Thruekin was very warmly met by Archibald Archibaldovich, and instantly relieved of the cursed rags. Were Thruekin not so torn up by the clinic visit and the truck ride, he probably would have relished recounting all that took place in the hospital and embellishing his story with fictional details. But right now, he had other things on his mind. Moreover, oblivious though Thruekin was, the torture he experienced on the truck made him look carefully into the pirate's face for the first time. He saw that although the man was asking about homeless and even exclaiming, oh my, he was actually quite indifferent to homeless's fate and did not pity him in the least. And good for him. That's the way to be, thought Thruekin, consumed by cynical, self-destructive hatred. He cut short his tale of schizophrenia and said, Archibald Archibaldovich, perhaps a sip of vodka. The pirate put on a sympathetic face and whispered, Understood, right this minute, and waved to a waiter. 15 minutes later, Thruekin, hunched over a plate of fish in complete solitude, downing shot after shot, realizing and admitting that nothing in his life could be fixed any more, but only forgotten. The poet had wasted his night while others celebrated, and knew now that he could not bring it back. He needed but to raise his head from the lamp to the sky to see that the night had irreversibly gone. The waiters hurriedly tore the tablecloths off the tables. The cats, sneaking by the veranda, had a distinctly mourning look. Daytime advanced relentlessly on the poet.